call the meeting order. Please rise for the pledge. Where's our flag?
In the
back there. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Gotta take a quick look.
That's not it. Hang on.
Okay. Rob, can we have the roll call, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Zimmer.
Here.
Director Hutchinson.
Here.
And Chairperson Ohilski.
Present. Okay. We don't know where Mr. Garfinkel or his alternate is, so we'll just proceed forward. If they show up, we'll let them sit. So do we have any opening board member comments?
None from me.
Okay, we'll move to the consent agenda then, Rob.
Great. On the consent agenda, you have two items, the minutes from the last meeting, which are always very helpful for me to remember exactly what we talked about because they're quite detailed. If there are any comments on those, staff would be happy to take suggestions or corrections. And then you also have on item 5B, your warrant and budget update. I did want to note that there was a correction to that that got posted because there was an invoice that came out after the first publication, and the corrected version is available for the public if they'd like to see it in the back. Otherwise, we'd like to go with that corrected version.
Yeah, and you forwarded that out to everyone.
We did, and posted it on the website, yeah.
So do we have any questions?
I just have a comment on the detail of the minutes. You know, they're good and they're detailed, but in light that we're videoing and recording the meetings, do we need to have that level of detail in the meeting, in the minutes? And the only reason why I ask is just is that incurring costs to do that? Are we you know, going through this and incurring additional costs, the staff time? I don't know how much is going into the prep, but they are very detailed and probably a little more detailed than I've seen in some other minutes.
Yeah, understood. They are detailed because we only meet once every few months. I'd say you probably don't see a lot of extra cost. Maybe it's a few $100 per meeting because it helps to prep me without having to go back through and listen. Within minutes, I can, no pun intended, review what happened and then respond to what the board requested. So if our meetings get more extensive in terms of the number of agenda items and the level of public comment and the number of hours, then we may have to revisit. But right now we feel like we're able to do this for the time being.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would just add on to that, you know, the people that have satellite instead of cable don't have access to the, you know, the video. So that's only on Charter. So
right.
I think that having the minutes accessible to everybody, unless it becomes overburdensome, is the best way to go. So any other comments before I have? Oh, let the record show that
Charlie showed up. You can call me late. Charlie Cody of S&T Mutual Water.
That's where I was going to say S&T first, then yes. So the alternate for S&T, Charlie, is here. Do you have any opening comments?
No.
I'll let you go back to that. Okay. Do we have any other questions on the consent agenda? Otherwise, we'll open it to public comment. Nope. Okay. Public comment on the consent agenda? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close it and bring it back for a motion.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as it stands.
Second.
We have a motion, second. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none. We don't have a resolution, so all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, seeing none. Seeing none, then the consent agenda is approved. So, Rob, let's move on to the next item, which is the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of items of note, and you have the written report in front of you. We did receive some further communication from the state on Prop 1. If you remember from last discussion, they were trying to determine if the construction of new wells and infrastructure would qualify as aquifer cleanup and therefore be eligible for the grant portion of their programs. And they'd struggle with this at a senior level because their current guidelines are intended to reflect treatment of contaminants as you pull it out of the ground, such as nitrate removal or chrome 6 removal. So the idea that we were shifting pumping to treat seawater intrusion was a little bit foreign to them. And so ultimately they decided that under the current guidelines, we would only qualify for the loan portion for our Program C components, the construction of new lower aquifer wells, but they're still interested in any of our Program B as in boy activities. If we ever do community-wide nitrate removal on a larger scale, it's likely that that would qualify for implementation under Prop 1. And they'll have future rounds, and we've planted the seed with them that we think the construction of our Program C wells should merit it, but that this time they're not able to give that a nod on the grant side of the equation. Not a lot to update on the zone of benefit analysis. You know that you've reallocated those funds for this year to spend on, hopefully, a new monitoring well in the Cuesta by the Sea area, which is an item that's on your agenda today. And we continue to pursue implementation of those Program C projects through the dollars that are available from the purveyors. A quick update on SGMA, and you'd see that in front of you. Basically, they formed the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, and they've retained CLEATH to do study, and they're holding community meetings and anticipating that they will have a study that we can then review sometime around January of next year, so within a six-month time frame. And just thought I'd flash the map up on the screen for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about. The red area with the cross-hatching represents the area that is adjudicated by the stipulated judgment that we've all agreed to here at this table. And it's the areas that are in the yellow that are outside of that hatched area are what we call the SGMA fringe areas. And those are the areas that are being managed by this recently formed Groundwater Sustainability Agency. And so you can see the overlapping there. If you're within the cross-hatched area, you're actually exempt from SGMA and not subject to it. I'll pause for any comments from board members. Okay. Oh, Mark.
Well, I did want to just...
Mark wanted to talk last.
Yeah, I felt it coming.
You could see. We'll move down. The direction of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, which is the board, which is the unhatched yellow area up there, and the CLEATH study is to get the state to adjust their groundwater basin boundary to match the community's boundary so that the yellow would match adjudicated management area.
Then you wouldn't have to do anything else, right?
And there would not be money and effort being spent out in the fringe areas. We could focus on where we think the groundwater basin really is.
Yeah.
And continue with the BMC's work in that area.
Understood. Thank you, sir. The last item on my report is an update on the Los Osos wastewater project. We are now, as of the beginning of September, 93% through the lateral connections. And so there are very few, less than 300 remaining in the entire community. So essentially complete. Flows continue to be less than 500,000 gallons a day. So I think we can all safely say that we are going to end up with less than half an MGD flowing to the wastewater treatment facility. And we'll be talking about that a little bit later when we talk about disposal options such as creek discharge. The water continues to go to Broderson as the primary method of disposal, and they're still working on final details and agreements with the purveyors on the delivery of recycled water. And Mark, I'll leave it to you if you want to augment that at all.
A couple of things. Staff report shows 282 properties not connected. That actually includes the very low-income properties that are in the county program funded by the federal government. We've worked through the management issues with the federal agencies involved, so we're on the verge of putting out contracts to get those connected. There's about 85 in that.
Oh,
so we're really down to under 200 unconnected properties, continuing the outreach there. And we'll be back at the board in the first or second week of November to continue the discussion with the Board of Supervisors about how to address unconnected properties. So we expect to be above 98 or 95% connected before this fall gets very far along, which is an amazing number for Los Osos after all the years and the expense involved. On the recycled water component, we continue to work through with the water companies the details of providing them with recycled water to deliver to their end customers, and then the district also directly to farmers. All of the details of the end users, interestingly, have to be included in the county's or the wastewater project's recycled water permit. So while the wastewater plant's creating the water and it's ready to go and all of that engineering is done, we need to gather up all the details from the school sites and golf course and farmers about who their site managers are and some other things and get those done. So it's quite a complicated process, but it is well along. We had hoped possibly to bring on customers as they were ready to go, but with the permit requirements, it's pretty much all or nothing. So the delay really is to get all done. Don't have a date for delivery yet, but we continue to work towards that.
You answered my question, but I'm going to ask it again. So you don't have a date for delivery, but is there some expectation this year, or do we have any idea?
Well, we had set ourselves a date of no later than July 1st of this year.
Right.
That's not working out.
I got that.
So we continue to push forward with a number of other agencies involved, not just regional board. It's very difficult to predict the date because it falls in different priorities depending on who you're working with. And so we'll get the herd of cats.
You're working aggressively moving on it, but it's just you can't set an outside date at this point. Pardon me, you're working aggressively, but you can't set an outside date at this point.
We'll know when we're there.
Okay. Any other question? Yeah, Mark?
Yeah, so I think that's good news, making progress on the project and the connections. One of the things, did you mention that the discharge to Broderson was from August or from March? From March, right? March of this year? Or, so the report says August, but I think
yeah, it says since August 10th. That's what the report says.
Of last year.
Oh, of last year.
Of last year.
That should be a clarification then
yeah.
when you
that
do
should
your
be,
minutes
yeah.
because
okay.
it's not clear.
I'll note that.
All right. And then just looking at the discharge, you know, I think that from the basin management, our committee standpoint, we should be looking at these discharge a little bit closer. I know it's saying that 430,000 gallons are going to the treatment plant, but what's actually going to Broderson, trying to bring that in and seeing, you know, I'd like to, now that we've been putting water at Broderson, look at more how Broderson is performing to expectations and things like that. Are we seeing anything? I know it's going to be a long time. That's a big process, but, you know, just tracking the amount of water that's actually being delivered to Broderson, I think would be helpful. And then if there's any indication of any response to Broderson, positive or things that we need to deal with or anything like that, I think from our perspective, that would be more in our realm to start addressing those now instead of later. So what would be the next steps for assessing the operation of Broderson? And then also we were talking about Bay Ridge. Is at one point, some of the water was going to be going to Bay Ridge. Is that currently happening today, and or is it planned for the future?
So the yeah, Let me answer the last question first. Bay Ridge, the potential for discharging at the Bay Ridge leach fields is an environmental requirement. So it's dependent on the results of monitoring the distribution of wetlands down that Willow Creek area. So we've done all of the baseline monitoring on that, and I think our first-year monitoring report on extent of wetlands across the community is due at the end of this year. With, however, last year's winter rains and stuff, just staff that are familiar with the extent of those wetlands and others have not seen any change at all. We've got some key sites that we'll actually go out and survey. So you would see water at Bay Ridge if it's needed to maintain the extent of wetland vegetation downstream in Willow Creek. So at this point, everything still is going up to Broderson. The only difference between plant inflow and Broderson discharge would be water loss in the process, so evaporation, which is pretty minimal. Last time I checked with staff, those monitoring wells that are just still on the Broderson property but on the down gradient side of the discharge site are showing no response yet. So it has not built a groundwater mound up to show up in our on-site monitoring wells. It'll be interesting to see, especially if we can shift over to recycled water in the next few months, how long we have to put water at Broderson before it does show up in those kinds of wells. Right. We don't have any tracer chemicals or anything. It's really just the piezometer and water depth readings. So it's a bit of an experiment at this point with those kind of flows under 500,000.
So all of the water is going to Broderson? But isn't there some loss and things of that nature, right?
Evaporation out of the ponds at the treatment plant. But we're not using, I think we've got three ponds. We're using one.
Okay, good.
Is any of the water going to the agricultural users at this point, or is it, I thought some was at this point.
No, you have to have your recycled water permits fully complete and issued.
So it's only Broderson.
Only Broderson.
So is there any benefit for our group to have this information maybe brought up with this report? Just
I think so. At the last time I saw the down gradient monitoring results, I did mention that in my next executive report. So when those things come out, I will report on them. Right. I think it's semi-annually or something like that I'm reviewing that.
Yeah, something like that. I think if we start seeing results, we'll probably go to more frequent monitoring just to track it. But it's going to be an interesting process, especially as we get to delivering recycled water within the community. As to whether we pick up anything from Broderson. Yeah. Obviously, the focus, the goal, the better use is recycled water. It's the one-to-one offset. But
okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, so we'll go to public comment on the executive director's reports. There was three items that Rob talked about: the funding and financing programs that support the basin plan implementation. Secondly, was the status of the zone of benefit analysis. And thirdly, was the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act compliance and pending deadlines. And the fourth thing was Los Osos wastewater project flows and connection update. So we'll take public comment on those four items. Thank you.
I'd like to address the issue on Broderson. Is it on?
No.
Okay, there it is. I'd like to address the issue regarding Broderson. I've toured the plant there at the recycling plant out there behind the cemetery, and what goes in at the plant, the only thing they take out is the nitrates and the and all the fecal material and that type of thing. They really don't take out all the salts and other CECs, medications, and paint thinners, and all the other things that go through the sewer system. So all the recycled water that comes through that plant, other than through the through the filters and through the getting the big particles and the ultraviolet lights. All those chemicals and all those CECs are basically being recycled through the system. And we are about approximately 10 square miles. And all those septic tanks were basically filtering that all those chemicals and so forth over that 10 square miles. Now it's all going into Broderson. So over a few square acres, all that recycled water is going back in through those few square acres and streamlining themselves back down into the upper aquifer, which concerns me from the fact that they're mainlining themselves back down into the upper aquifer. And we're going to rapidly increase our rate of poisoning that upper aquifer with all the chemicals, CECs, and so forth that we've in that reclaimed water. So I'd like to know what's being considered with that. That is a real point of concern because we have not come up with a plan for generating potable water. The idea of doing a reverse osmosis has been shot down. So that is a real point. And the farmers have claimed that they really don't want the water because of the salts in there from all the saltwater desofteners and or water softeners and so forth. So we have got a real concern with what's going on with that. We can't sell the water to our neighborhoods because of the regulations on residential systems. So we've got issues with that. So that's one part of the concern that I have. So we need to address that. And I do have other concerns that I'd like to talk about later on.
Okay, thank you. And we'll address the questions after our public comment. Lindy? I think it's Lindy. I don't have my glasses on, so.
That's definitely.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen. And I guess I have, I missed the, I got here a little bit late, 400,000 gallons still coming to Broderson about? And what's the expectation of the full amount of processed water? Is my question, because Morro Bay is going to spend almost the same amount we spent for a treatment plant alone. They're not even putting in the system. They're putting it on the edge of town that is closest to Los Osos. If we've got 50% capacity, I don't know if it takes brain surgeons to sit down and figure this out, but it certainly seems possible that a smaller community could send us all of their wastewater. We could add that to our treatment, lower the price for ourselves, lower the price for Morro Bay. We're all hurting from the cost of this process and this sewer. So I want to know where, if there's any discussion, or is that just too complicated for anybody to figure out? Another one is I agree with Steve. The whole idea was to get this to farmers so they stop pulling out of the aquifer. We're in this great race to put wells at the deeper back into the aquifer, but that's where the farmers are also pulling out. Now, the idea was to be able to give them a product that was good enough to balance out what we're using, and whether it was the lowering of the price so they could clean it a little bit more before they put it on their crops or whatever. That was the goal. That was the initial goal. Broderson was backup. Now we've made Broderson, this outrageously expensive. We have to pay for maintenance on it, and we're dumping water, which is very sad because I don't think it's coming back to our aquifers for probably another 10, 15 years. The cemetery is completely looking dry and dead right now. My God, does that, that's again, call in the rocket scientists. They're right next door. Can you not get water to them and let them at least have green? I mean, it's cheaper to give it to the cemetery than it is to pay for ourselves to ship it up that hill. It costs money to send it to Broderson. That is not a freebie. So anyway, I'm kind of disgusted to see where this is going. Since water is really our problem here, the wastewater was, you can argue any way you want it, but there were many other ways to solve our wastewater problem than the one we chose. So really, I'd like to see if there isn't a chance to work with Morro Bay and put triple pipes across the wetlands to get their effluent over to us, I mean their waste over to us, And if we need to give them back the water, great. If not, we'll keep the water. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard, is anybody after Richard? Oh, you already spoke.
There's observations, four issues, I think.
3 minutes total. I'll let you have a few more minutes, but it was 3 minutes total. But I'll let you have a few more. Okay.
Richard Margetson, at what point is do we take an official stance that recycled water to the dry land farmers is no longer on the table? I've been making comments about that at the Board of Supervisors for years. All that pipe and all of that engineering was paid for by the project and the residents of this community. It looks like it will never happen at the rate of flow now. And I look at that as a complete loss of infrastructure that was paid by this community that will never be used. Can somebody, maybe the county or Rob, address that? Because the mitigation factor for dryland farmers is zero. And I thought the goal of the project was to send recycled water to those areas that had the highest mitigation factor for seawater intrusion. And with this limited flow, if it's, say it's 450,000 gallons, that's about what the initial take at Broderson was going to be. So are we going to now step, have a step system of what's going where? Is that holding up the negotiations with the school districts on how much water they're actually going to get at some point? Because the mitigation factors for all of these areas are different. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm sorry for the confusion, but it was 3 minutes total for all four of those, but I'll give you more time just because of the confusion there.
Well, there is multiple issues, and it's pretty hard to address that in that timeline. I have been working with a plan here. Rob Miller is very familiar with what I'm talking about here. I've also spent some time with Salute Carver Hall and a few other people within the community. I've also spent some time with the other engineer who is up for the contract. He's the third item on the agenda. Name's escaping me for the minute. What's his name?
Spencer Harris.
Spencer Harris. I've talked to Spencer Harris about some of this. These are all viable. This is a viable possibility. I've come up with a plan that can produce, that can modify the existing wastewater facility that we have, recyclable facility, and turn that into a potable water generating facility that will produce no concentrated water discharge with 100% potable water productivity with a and it'd be 100% solar with no fossil fuel footprint. It could take care of about 1.5 to 2 acre feet a day, and this would be all done with the existing facility, and it can all be with grants and federal funding, and this would be able to produce potable water that could be put back into the ground anywhere that we have the ability to control the aquifer, either through the creek or through injection, or sell it back to the community through residential irrigation applications, so we can, there's no limitations as to who we can sell it back to, so we can generate funding through this program. The funding could be self-generating in terms of its income. This project would be in the long term a no-cost project to Los Osos.
You got one more minute, Steve.
And this project, I've also spent some time with Jerry Wilson, Williams with JW Design, and we're going to be working together on putting together a cost analysis on this project so we can be able to put together a budget and then be able to start talking about real numbers and what we could put together on this thing. So what I'd like to know is, how serious are you guys about doing something serious for Los Osos? You know, this is a real project. This is something that can really happen. This is not just fairyland talk. We can talk about doing 1 acre to 2 acre feet a day with potable water, with no fossil fuel footprint, with the existing facility that we have, and taking care of all the waste that comes from it, and combine it with the existing waste facility and discharge it with no concentrated waste that you would have with reverse osmosis.
Okay.
It'd all be done through distillation. Okay. So it's a real project. If you want to talk about it, I've got it.
Okay. Well, yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll close public comment then. So Rob, and then I think there's some questions that Mark is probably more able to answer. So.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was quite a bit of discussion about Broderson and the discharge there. Just wanted to give a couple clarifications. One is that many of our local communities do discharge their treated wastewater back into the ground without what we'd call advanced treatment that goes beyond tertiary. And so many of our local aquifers are being replenished in the same manner as what's occurring at Broderson. That doesn't mean that salts and CECs, which is contaminants of emerging concern, use that at home, everyone will be impressed. There's no end goal right now from the state. They're regulating those contaminants over time. So there could be further, more stringent requirements at some point in the future on these types of discharges. So I didn't want to dismiss the fact that it's an important community discussion. It is. And we do know that some of those items, you know, like ibuprofen and caffeine, show up in very, very minute trace amounts in our drinking water today. So we should all be educated on that. The use of Broderson is addressed in Chapter 9 of the Basin Plan. For those of you who want to go back and look, it's posted on our website. But essentially, that discharge was intended to replenish our upper aquifer because all the septic systems were removed from that zone. So it was somewhat of a mitigation required to put the 448-acre-feet within the Broderson footprint. That doesn't mean we can't revisit that assumption. It's just I wanted to give you the history as to where that came about. As to Morro Bay and 50% capacity, and now that Morro Bay's and Cayucos are going different directions, whether those two could be a marriage, be happy to make that call to Morro Bay if anyone wants me to.
Well, let me jump in there. Morro Bay's already made that call to us. And our response, the County Public Works Department response to Morro Bay, is we are open to any sort of partnering program that they want to propose. They haven't acted on that yet, nor they're considering it. Now, I've heard flows for Morro Bay at times in excess of 1 million gallons a day. Do I have that right?
That includes Cayucos.
So if you and take Cayucos out, you're down to
0.6, 0.7 with conservation, 0.8.
Yeah, so that doesn't make it impossible.
It doesn't make it, because our treatment plant can do what?
Well, it's rated at 1 MGD. You want to have some room for growth, but you do some equalization basin kinds of things and whatnot.
Yeah.
One of the challenges for Morro Bay is that they're going to want all their water back. So it gets treated to some level, presumably what the plant does now, and then their water's pump back to Morro Bay, and then they take it to whatever higher level they want. I think their plan right now involves advanced treatment and a brine discharge through the existing outfall, but that's all preliminary stuff. So, yeah, certainly if Morro Bay feels that partnering with Los Osos is the way to go, then we'll put it on the table and see what kind of savings we could get out of it.
There you go. You heard it here, the Basin Management Committee.
Not first.
First publicly or not?
It's, you know, there it is.
Did you want to mention cemetery real quick? I think you've had some discussions with the cemetery.
Yeah, I don't know where the cemetery is on the idea. Their first response was, oh, we've got a well, but we're there and we're next to them. Obviously, the coastal permit has a set of priorities for that recycled water, and the priority is replacing potable water in town.
Right.
So that's why we're working with the water companies and the golf course to get that requirement met. And I'm not sure that there is a requirement for 448 at Broderson. I think that's a long-term top limit, actually, in the coastal permit. And there was some thought that if there was issues with the bayfront wetlands, we might go to Broderson. But I think we've always thought it'd be way more efficient to pipe the water over to where they want the wetlands to grow.
Great.
But that also could be revisited. It's this push-pull between salt marsh and freshwater wetlands that depends on what biologists you've got. So still moving ahead. Really what we're doing is implementing the plan that's in the wastewater project, which is to work with the water companies to get recycled water to in-town irrigation sites. That's the number one priority, and then everything else falls in behind that.
And I know that the coastal development permit had, I think, a 10% reservation for agriculture. What that reservation really means, I guess it hasn't been tested in this context.
No, not at this point. Not at these flows. And you know, there was talk early on about sites not currently irrigated, even though they're over the east end of the aquifer. They have very short contracts. And part of the thinking there is, in essence, to demonstrate the viability of recycled water to the other farmers who are down in the valley. Some of those guys are talking about taking recycled water, and some are talking about watching what happens with the water. So we continue to push to get it in town to show that we can irrigate schools and golf courses without killing the grass or having bad effects, and then continue to work on the program over time to bring it fully mature. It became obvious pretty soon that it wasn't going to hit the ground full speed right away. People were just not going to buy into that. So.
Okay.
We continue to work on it.
I also
comment if I could.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Rob asked a moment ago, and just to step back one click on this, if Rob asked a moment ago that
microphone. Turn the little red.
If the county or if the committee would like him to make a contact with Morro Bay, and I think that question wasn't really answered, and it was dropped, and it was maybe a little facetious on your part, but. You say that the county has already had at least a contact with Morro Bay about using the wastewater treatment plant.
Yes.
And so I bring us back to Rob's comment about should the committee get involved, should staff go ahead and make a contact with Morro Bay, or should we leave that to the county? Is it the county's job, or is it the committee, should the committee get involved?
Well, the issue with Morro Bay is they have a lot of different thoughts about where to go with their wastewater project. And it's at my level in the staff, we answer the technical questions and make it clear both to their technical people and members of their advisory committee, their official advisory committee, that we are very much open to discussing partnering with them. And sort of what's the work, making the Los Osos plant more efficient. Now, whether the city wants to move ahead on that or not really is the city's decision. County staff's not in a role to be an influencer, shall I say.
How about I would suggest that the Basin Management Committee might make that contact that Rob was mentioning just to check and see if they're interested in a piping project like that.
And I'd be happy to do that, probably a low risk to their program manager who is in my role, just to say that it got discussed in a public setting in case it gets back to them and there is interest in furthering preliminary discussions. I'd be happy to do that.
It's a big piping project.
I know for the public to be aware that water today from Morro Bay goes to an ocean outfall. Out behind Morro Bay High School. It's discharged to the ocean, but they do plan to reuse it, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, their long-term plan is the same as ours, full reuse.
Right. I did want to address the solar distillation concept a little bit because the industry is maturing for solar distillation. I'm personally interested in that technology, not just for here, but for other areas in the county, just because it is an alternative to reverse osmosis and doesn't have the brine stream because you're concentrating that brine to a level of almost a solid. So I have some interest in understanding the feasibility of that at an industrial scale on a number of different levels. NAPUMA looked at this a few years ago when they were looking at supplemental water alternatives. That's one data point we can look at for solar distillation. That's all I've got.
You got anything in addition, Rob? Or pardon me, Mark, I'm probably... Nope.
I don't think so.
Okay, so then we'll move on to the action items. First item is 7A, update on the status... Pardon me. Update on the status of the basin plan infrastructure projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because last one went pretty long, I'll be brief on this one. We just continue to provide the committee with a running update on the status of the various projects. The district's 8th Street well is in design, and we're expecting a technical memorandum to be released shortly on the equipping phase of that well. We still are looking to get that up and running by June of 2018 to be able to pump 100 to 150 acre feet of upper aquifer water at 8th Street. Golden State is in the process of commissioning their nitrate removal system that we've been talking about in previous meetings, and it sounds like, based on the recent discussions, that in a few weeks, in October, they'll begin that commissioning process. And so customers within Golden State service area will also be receiving additional upper aquifer supply through their Skyline well and their nitrate removal system. Mark, jump in if I've misspoken on that.
No, that's correct.
We are continuing to pursue additional wells under Program C. We have a number of properties that are in play. Some of that was discussed in recent closed session discussions, so I'm not going to go into detail at this time. But the district is taking the lead on those efforts currently and has put rates in place that theoretically could allow drilling of at least one additional Program C well in the next 12 months if we can get it permitted and a site found. So I'm hoping that's going to get more and more real as the meetings roll by, and we'll have a site at some point and a schedule and a permit process to get that next well drilled. I did want to mention that the project that we call the Los Osos Valley Road Water Main Upgrade, I've changed the funding status on that from previous meetings to a potential deferral. As the community has conserved water and our acre foot delivered every year has been cut back, the numbers, the hydraulics of the basin plan, I think would allow that at least for a period of time we may not need additional pipe capacity even if we build some Program C wells over to the east of South Bay Boulevard. We don't know that for certain at this point, but I think it's a likely outcome. So I'm starting to list that particular line item as a potential deferral to Program D, as in dog, which is the installation of wells east of Los Osos Creek. And then our Zone D&E lower aquifer monitoring well has now been listed as potentially funded through the BMC budget, but that's an agenda item later on in the meeting. That concludes my comments.
Any questions?
Oh. No.
Okay, so we'll go to public comment on the update on the status of the basin plan infrastructure projects. Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. The recommended action is to provide input to staff for future action. I'm fine with the report the way it is, so I think that the deferral on the LOVR main, and I have no other comments on it, so I think, unless somebody else does.
No.
Okay. All right, so we'll move on to 7B, which is the Water Conservation Program update. Rob?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a general update on a couple of fronts. One is we provided a link, and it's available online, to the Water Conservation Implementation Plan addendum that this committee endorsed back in November of last year. The county has stepped up and submitted a series of potential rebates, both indoor and outdoor, to the Coastal Commission for consideration. And those are projects that are for wastewater customers only, and the outdoor measures are limited to those that relate to the wastewater project in the county's view, and that includes construction of a gray water system on individual properties, converting your laundry discharge to gray water irrigation, and then for the larger recycled water users, such as commercial and institutional users, they can have a variable rebate there to cover some of the on-lot costs. There's also a host of interior rebates that were not previously available to the degree now suggested, including washing machines, hot water recirc, and other items. So as soon as the commission approves that suggested set of updates, those can go live at the county level, and we can then begin to figure out how to get the word out effectively so people take advantage of those. The last time we talked about a number of different suggestions or possibilities for having a working committee of some kind to get the word out to the community and to generally encourage conservation. You asked me to come up with an estimated price of having full Brown Act committee meetings, and I've produced that in your staff report, somewhere in the range of $1,400 to $1,800 per meeting if we can use the CSD office and not televise those meetings. And so if you hold them quarterly, you're somewhere in the $5,600 to $7,200 range for a full Brown Act committee, including posting the agenda, producing the packages. As long as the agendas are not too extensive, I think that could be done for that amount. We didn't want to have any decision factor here today. Erica wasn't able to make the meeting, and she suggested that we defer a final action on this to a subsequent meeting. But if there's any input on that cost range, we'd love to hear it. The Morro Bay National Estuary Program, who has supported a number of our processes, including recent funding to help us test Los Osos Creek, they've offered to help us out with some of their social media expertise and their media expertise to get the word out. So short of hard dollar contributions for mailers, which they don't currently have in their budget, they certainly would offer some staff time to help us inform the public. And I do want to continue to keep Title 19 on radar because it is being used out there for properties outside the prohibition zone, and they're doing things like replacing washing machines on the private side as part of Title 19. And I'd be, I think our next step will be to see if the commission can respond to our request, the county's request to add these new rebates, and to continue to look for funding sources for the rebates that are not yet funded, which including the repurposing of septic tanks for rainwater use. Be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, I had one question that's not clear to me. The last sentence and the last sentence under the Title 19 status, I'm not clear what you're saying there.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. So if right now Title 19 is on a purely case-by-case basis, so if you're looking to get Title 19 certificates, you have to suggest and negotiate quantities and approach, whereas those could be formalized in accordance with what we've already produced, and that was the reason for that sentence.
So there'd be a set formula.
Yeah.
Okay. That wasn't clear to me, so I appreciate that clarification.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah, just going back to the subcommittee portion that we're going to discuss next time. You know, one of the things, and I don't know if it's in one of the alternatives, but I think Marshall mentioned having a evening basin management committee meeting just to kind of, you know, what I really don't want to see is us just form another committee and incur these costs when it's the objective could be accomplished in this meeting. You know, when we first started talking about this, there was a lot of different conversations going on, and it wasn't really clear the pathway for each agency. You know, every agency had its own conservation program the county was implementing theirs, and it seems like it's coming together, and maybe we could achieve that goal by having a evening meeting and get the outreach.
A workshop.
A workshop, right. Yeah. So maybe if we're going to bring it back next week, could we add that to the agenda as a line item for an alternative?
Yeah, okay. I can do that.
Not next week, next month.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? All right, well, those are two good clarifications. So public comment then on item 7B, the Water Conservation Program update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards. And Mr. Chairman, you asked about the last sentence of staff's report on the conservation, and that's my request of you this afternoon. Is do just that, is to ask the county to include all of the measures that you've incorporated for the rebates into the Title 19 program. As you heard from staff, everything is being handled on a case-by-case basis right now, and that's not a recipe for efficiency at all. And in fact, I would submit to you that the only conservation, virtually the only conservation occurring in town right now, is associated with Title 19. The rebate program, even when approved by the Coastal Commission, will be of nominal value. The real savings is through money. People need to spend money to save water. And the rebate program is underfunded, not likely to get supplemental funding, in my opinion. So let's bring the Title 19 program up to snuff, and then there are options for the customers. We know there is anywhere from 200 to 300 acre feet of additional conservation that we can achieve in this community. Right now, our consumptive demand is approximately 2,200 acre feet, a little bit under, 21.5. We have the ability to reduce total consumption in the basin to less than 2,000 acre feet a year. It's a no-brainer. So I would ask you, to do exactly what the last sentence says. Ask the county to incorporate all of your rebate provisions into the Title 19 ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep, Lindy.
Lindy Owen, I wanted to speak more on the discussion about the conservation information and the sharing of it. I hear ads on a couple of the radio stations I listen to sending people to Slow City. I think Paso's included. There are like four or five cities that have all joined together to put up the conservation information sites, and they invite people to go to those sites. I've always wondered why we feel like we have to go reinvent the wheel. We're not, any smarter than anybody else, and it's been invented. So I just encourage that we really consider maybe getting in on theirs if it's appropriate. And then, again, some of the Title 19 stuff should be able to be accessed through that website, and then public information of sending people to go to those sites would really help. I'm going to sneak back on the last subject. Have we got any plan to put dye of some kind into the Brodersen disposal so that we can see where the water goes and how long it takes? It was estimated to take something like 12 years to get through the upper aquitard. That's a long time. So I think if we want to see where the water is going, what it's doing, we need to put some kind of dye in to watch the behavior of that disposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close it, bring it back. I agree on that Title 19 issue, that it's something that we probably should refer to the county. I appreciate it's not going to be something that happens overnight, but I think the idea of having some surety is helpful, because I think people just don't know what they understand the process, but when it says case-by-case basis, to the average person, it seems very, very complex.
Right. And staff would be happy to do that. I can do that with your authorization.
Yeah, I think we have some consensus on a referral to the county on that one.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else? Do you have any comment on the dye issue? I know it's come up before, but just...
Yeah, we sometimes call it a tracer to avoid people's... It's not going to turn the water color. Certainly required, and you're going to hear about it when we talk about creek discharge. Today, the state's not requiring it. But I think it's a... To me, it's a technical of technical interest to see if there are elements that are in the wastewater today that we believe would persist in the aquifer that we could use as a tracer. And so that might be worth a little discussion with the county, with your wastewater experts there, Mark, and see if, with all the testing that you've done, perhaps we can pick out one or two things that would be an indication that we can test for downstream. Right now, we're not even getting any water in the downgradient well, so it'd be no samples to take. But that will change. Presumably, I've heard an estimate of 2 years. But I think it would be good to begin sampling those and seeing the signature, water quality signature, and track that as it goes down the line. I think that's a prudent thing.
Okay. All right. So that moves us on to item 7C, which is the award of the contract to Cleith Harris Geologists for design of the Cuesta by the Sea Lower Aquifer Monitoring Well. And I appreciate the staff report, but I think, Rob, if you could just give a little overview for background purposes for people who haven't been involved as much as the committee has.
I was thinking the same, Mr. Chair, which is why I produced a little
slide
for us.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
There you go. So for those of you that didn't attend our last meeting, for many years now, and this is back since 2004, we've wanted to have a lower aquifer monitoring well at the end of the Red Arrow there in the Cuesta by the Sea area. We attempted to drill one with DWR grant funds in 2004, and the hole collapsed on us, and we were unable to complete it. So that is a dark spot on our radar, you could say. We don't know if seawater is coming in at that point or if that remains fresh. And it's really a critical area within the community. So it's been on our plan ever since the first draft of the basin plan. But just recently, as we begin to realize that the Prop 218 process for a community-wide special tax is probably not going to happen this year, and yet we're carrying a Basin Management Committee budget item of over $100,000 for that. And so staff came up with the suggestion that we look to spend that money to actually drill this monitoring well and get it done and begin monitoring it. And the committee agreed with that at our last meeting, subject to seeing the actual numbers that come back in terms of the bids to make sure we're within expectations. And so we reached out to Cleith Harris, who was there in the original drilling. We now know where we're not going to drill because there's a big hunk of concrete down in the ground. And they're ready to move forward to get that well, monitoring well, designed and sited in coordination with the county. And that's the subject of the current staff report. So our suggestion is to retain Cleith Harris in an amount not to exceed $15,000, which includes both their design work and their construction observation work, basically to get us through the process of implementing this well. Now, the committee itself would be reviewing the scope of Cleith's work and the fee to make sure that $15,000 seems reasonable. Staff feels like it is. As to how we actually contract for that service, I've had some communication with the county, and they had a suggestion, which I think is a good one. For many of our, we're going to call them soft costs, things like studies, we've been contracting through the same mechanism we've had for years through the attorney and paying it out on a pro rata portion. But what this committee has not done is put any physical facilities in the ground, and we need an owner of those facilities and the appropriate insurance and contract language. And so the county's suggestion was, if the BMC endorses the scope and the fee, to have one of the public entities actually carry the contract on that. Probably the CSD would be a natural, not to speak for the CSD, But our meetings are more frequent, perhaps easier than getting it on a Board of Supervisors agenda. And then we would end up being the owner of that well. And the county could help us by doing the encroachment permit process, helping us site the well, look at traffic control. And that's how the nuts and bolts would work of actually pulling this off. So staff's request for the committee would be then just to endorse the scope and fee or give us any comments that we need to incorporate, and then the district can take the lead.
That will be up to the district to decide if they
district
want
board.
To.
Yes.
So any questions before we go to public comment? Mark, do you have a question?
So are you referring to just Cleith Harris's work or the actual well itself?
I think it's likely that if we walk down that path with Cleith Harris, then the well itself, though the funding may come jointly among the parties, there needs to be one entity in charge. Similar to the way we did our combined intertie with Golden State, the district did the contracting for that. We shared the cost. Just one suggestion. The county could be the entity as well. But.
I think there ought to be a way to do that where the new infrastructure would be managed by one of the
Mike, please. Thank
by one of the four entities, and the ownership would still be the Basin Management Committee ownership, and there would be some kind of compensation to that the entity doing the management.
Well, because we are not an actual entity that can own things today, the way we're formed without being a joint powers, somebody at this table, an individual entity, needs to take ownership. We thought it should probably be a public agency, but it could be the county, it could be the district, to the mutual benefit and access. All parties can have access for monitoring that well at their discretion, their individual discretion, because they're paying for a portion of it. But one party should put it in.
No, and that becomes part of the agreement from all the parties, even though, let's just say, the CSD would own it. There would be an agreement that all parties would have access to it, the ability to, you know. So it's just a question of who is the physical owner, because like Rob said, and we talked about this way back when the committee was being formed and through the adjudication process, et cetera, whether it's going to be a JPA or what the function and form was being, we came up with the committee rather than being a JPA. So,
yeah, I think we should, these things have to be drawn up, but I don't think this should slow us down for achieving that well.
All right, and so we'll go to public. Oh, you have something else before I go to public comment, or you want to wait?
I just, not sure if I can commit to that from Golden State without.
Well, we're not committing to that
at
this
point.
Well,
okay, I just want to make that clear that, you know, I want to keep things moving forward, but
Well, none of us can commit because I've got to get my board.
Okay,
you've got
okay,
to get
good.
So.
Yeah, it's a little different. Maybe we just say just the soft costs of designing the well for now.
That's
we'll bring
cool.
back bids, and then we got to decide how to do the ownership.
Yeah, I think
good.
That's how we have to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Again, I thought when I said I couldn't speak for my board that that applied to everybody. So. All right. So we'll go to public comment on this item, which is the award of the contract to Cleith Harris Geologists, and this is for soft costs only. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back.
So I'd like to make a motion to award the contract for the design and soft cost, as we just discussed, to Cleith Harris, as described.
Yeah.
Not to exceed $15,000.
Not to exceed $15,000.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay. We'll have... Take a break here for a second.
Okay.
Oh, you guys are done?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. So I have a motion and a second. I don't think there's any further discussion. So we're going to accept the proposal. The motion is with the upset limit of $15,000.
Yeah. And who was the motion maker on that? I'm sorry.
Charlie and...
Sunset
Terrace and Golden State.
Yeah, made by Golden State, second by...
Oh, I'm sorry, I had it backwards.
All right. And are you ready for a roll call vote, sir?
If you'd like.
All right, Director Zimmer.
Yes.
Director Cody.
Yes.
Director Hutchinson.
Yes.
Chairperson Olhelski.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so the last item on this part of the agenda is the 7D, which is the Creek Discharge Plan Technical Memo, which is obviously an extensive part of our staff report.
It is. And because we're hitting you cold with this, I'm not asking for any firm action today, but we are asking you to take it in, to read it, to think about it. And this is really a bit broader, I guess you could say, than just talking about the Los Osos Creek discharge. And the reason is that the state has a new set of regulations for groundwater replenishment and recharge. And the engineering community has been spending the last few years trying to figure out exactly what they mean and exactly how to comply with them. And so not only would this affect a Los Osos Creek discharge, but any other future project that is deemed to be a recharge project by the Division of Drinking Water at the state board level. That would include deep well injection. It would include any discharge to Broderson that goes over 448 acre feet, or any other idea that would be more of a direct recharge. So take this in a broad sense so you could begin to digest the types of things that the state is grappling with and what's required. I wanted to thank the consultant team because they bit off a very challenging phased approach to this to put together a plan to move us forward, and that's what we want to talk about here today. So when we talk about Los Osos Creek discharge, we're really looking at increasing the yield to our lower aquifer during the dry period. And I'll show you a little cheesy graphic here in a second, which I think is actually helpful. We want to minimize the cost of any project by maximizing natural treatment processes through things like soil and the natural fresh water that already flows down the creek. We want to grapple with, and we may not do that today, but at some point we're going to have to do it, with available recycled water flows, which are going to be in the 500 to 600 acre foot range for existing development. We don't think we're going to get beyond that. And so there's a limited resource there that we have to use prudently. We have a number of competing interests for that water. We have within the coastal development permit a reservation to agriculture. We're trying to figure out exactly what that means. Was that at planned flows or was that at actual flows, because it's a 10% number within the coastal development permit for the wastewater project. We've got Broderson that can be up to 448. Schools might use 40 to 50. Those are round numbers. And then the Sea Pines Golf Course may use, say, 45 acre feet. Again, that's an approximate number if half of their water demand was recycled water. And I did want to note that when you hear all these complexities, the physical facilities associated with any creek discharge project can be studied somewhat independently from some of these testing phases that I'm going to be talking about. So if the committee wanted to move forward on a parallel route, we could begin looking at the physical location where we're going to discharge this water and look to enter into permitting discussions and permitting phase in terms of a coastal development permit. So first, the aerial graphic that shows on the right side of the screen, you see the wastewater recycling facility, and the purple line there shows the recycled water lines in concept. And then where it says discharge location, that's the portion of Los Osos Creek where we'd look to actually put the water. That is the highly permeable portion, where we know that up to 10 cubic feet per second when it flows down the creek disappears before it gets to Los Osos Valley Road. That's how permeable it is. And so we, by putting in, even if it was all the recycled water we can generate, it would just be a little bit of water compared to the assimilative capacity of the creek in that section. Pause for a break here. You see Los Osos Valley Road there in the center of your screen, which we wouldn't want the water to go beyond that point because it becomes less pervious, less able to get into the groundwater basin. The unique characteristic of the creek at this location is that the lower aquifer, what we call Zone D, actually outcrops in the creek. So when water goes down at this location, it recharges our lower aquifer directly. So here's the graphic that I thought would be a little helpful just to envision. It's not exactly either 2D or 3D, so just bear with me. Where it shows conceptual discharge is where, on the left side of the screen, the recycled water would be discharged to the creek. And that is then in direct communication via percolation with our deep aquifer, Zone D. The state requires, and you're going to hear this discussion, direct and dedicated monitoring wells that would occur between the discharge and between you, where you actually withdraw the water. The state wants definitive proof in these new regulations that the trace contaminants that would be of concern for drinking are fully addressed before it gets to whatever downstream potable well that we might drill. So the state approached this very conservatively, even compared to other places around the globe. And so they want definitive proof that there's no impact before they will allow this to occur. So here are some of the requirements put in very broad language because they're quite voluminous. Basically, we have to meet requirements for various dissolved contaminants, be it metals or other constituents. And we have to have a level of what we'll call pathogen reduction. Those are things like bacteria, viruses, things that would tend to not be treated in the soil column. We have to go beyond tertiary treatment to remove those things. So many people think, well, the minute you say tertiary water, well, that's as clean as it gets. It's the final step. But all throughout the state of California, there are treatment processes that are going beyond tertiary to remove some of these trace pathogens before it can be used for recharge. You do get credit from the state in the soil column. So the physical characteristics of the bottom of the creek will matter to the state in terms of how much credit they will give you. And in the testing phase, you actually go out, get samples from the bottom of the creek that are representative, and run pilot tests on those physical samples, because most of the treatment occurs within the first 10 feet or so of what happens in that soil column. So even if the water spends months and months in the soil, most of the treatment value happens in that first zone. So there's physical testing required by the state to pull this off. And as you'll see later, the monitoring requirements are fairly extensive. And often we see monitoring as being a relatively minor cost in the scheme of things, but it's becoming more major as we discover new contaminants to test for. Lab processes become more sophisticated and hence costly. And so there are some numbers in here that we'll provide that show you that, that monitoring becomes a big ticket item annually. And then pilot testing and field studies aren't just suggested, they're required. So they want to see physical results on actual effluent in order to allow it to proceed forward. So when we talk about what we call analytical cost, that means the cost of the lab testing. You can see that the state is requiring a significant number of different chemicals to be tested, and these are in addition to what's already being tested in your current monitoring program and in the county's monitoring program for the wastewater project. So if we were to turn this on today and operate this GRRP, groundwater recharge and replenishment project, this is what we'd be subject to, about $70,000 per year worth of analytical tests that we would do quarterly in the monitoring wells and in the effluent and for what we call diluent. That's the fresh creek water that's flowing down before it gets to our recharge project. I did want to note we did one sampling event, which we want to give out some thanks to the Morro Bay National Estuary folks for helping us fund this. And we did find that the water in Los Osos Creek during this last rainy season was of sufficient quality to qualify as diluent water. So very clean in terms of chemical content and salt content. So One of the things that we're going to need to do is look at the physical performance of a number of different treatment options if we want to move forward on this. Some of those options are very viable. Some are prohibitively expensive, but I wanted to give you the family of options here. The first is membrane and reverse osmosis. This is what Morro Bay is actually thinking of doing with their treated wastewater. You heard that, a little bit about that earlier. They can pull that off because they currently have a pipeline that goes out to the ocean, and they can use that for their brine that comes out of this membrane process. So reverse osmosis, basically the clean water comes through, and there's a rejected brine that's very salty, and that's what is very hard to manage when you are an inland discharger like Los Osos. We've got no access to the ocean currently. Now, if you did an advanced process like distillation, that wouldn't necessarily produce that product, and you heard a little bit about that earlier. But if you're going to do deep well injection on the west side, because there's been some discussion of that, under the current regs, it would require that process. You would have to go to that level in order to do deep well injection. If you're discharging to a creek and doing percolation, you don't have to do that necessarily. But you must prove by pilot testing that you can hit all the state's numbers before they'll let you move forward. The less costly and more viable approaches are the bottom three. One is just activated carbon, similar to what you put in your house, but it gets very costly to operate that. Even though the capital cost is attractive, the cost per acre foot is very high because you're having to change out the carbon every time it gets spent. And so most people are not going with that option. They're going with the one below that, which is, yes, use carbon, but use a bacterial culture that lives on that carbon to perform the treatment. And that way you don't have to replace the carbon continually. That has a little higher capital cost, but when you're looking at it over 20, 30 years, it's not bad at all, $3 million. And the O&M is much less expensive, a couple hundred dollars per acre foot for biologically active carbon. But the performance of that is a little bit proprietary right now. It's not been done extensively, and they make you pilot test. And we've had some costs to do that later on in the presentation. Advanced oxidation, where you, similar to oxidizing a wound, for want of a better explanation, with hydrogen peroxide or other strong oxidant, that also can kill bacteria, viruses, and so forth. And that is a viable option, about the same capital costs as the active carbon, and the operations and maintenance costs you see there, $400 to $700 per acre foot, also probably reachable in the scheme of things. So when you put it all together in a program, if we were to move forward, we would have to commit to some, you know, we've been stepping through this very carefully, to understand the regs and to spend, you know, modest sums, 20 to 25 grand a year is what we've been spending. To get to the next level, the state wants to see real values, real physical testing, drilling of real monitoring wells where you can measure travel time. So the next steps get spendy. Some of the big ticket items up there would be to look at the baseline water quality. That would mean we'd be testing out there, testing the creek four times a year, whenever there's flow in the creek, getting a good solid baseline, taking samples of the soil out there in the creek and testing those samples so that we can know the physical properties and how it would affect the treatment characteristics. We'd have the studies that speak to how long the water would stay in the ground, and the construction of the monitoring wells to prove that. And that goes back to this idea of a tracer being in the water. You'd actually have physical tracers and so forth ultimately when you operated this system to prove how long it was in the ground. And then we'd have physical pilot tests where you'd rent pilot equipment and then test it at the wastewater plant and write up a report to prove to the state that these systems will work and have the performance that's required. This is all to avoid going to the heavy expense of looking at membrane treatment, which is really not viable in Los Osos because of the lack of a brine discharge. So this type of activity is more grant-worthy than some of the things that we've suggested elsewhere in the basin plan, like drilling new wells. So there are programs out there to fund these types of studies. They typically fund them on the basis of a match. And so we're looking at integrated regional water funds. We're looking at Title 19 funds with the Bureau of Reclamation. And so we don't have a funding plan for you here today. We wanted to get these cost levels in front of the committee, have an open discussion before we got too far ahead of ourselves. If we were to take next steps, this is what it would look like. Number one is we'd come back for a detailed discussion of how effluent volumes would be allocated and what does it mean to compare the benefits of Broaderson and direct reuse here in the community with creek discharge, and we'd have an open discussion on that. If we did pursue creek discharge, we'd look for funding for the testing and the monitoring phases, the $500,000 that we just suggested here in moving that forward. And if desired, we could run land use approvals concurrently with the testing phases, and that would be a more modest expenditure. We can bring numbers back, but perhaps that's, you know, $30,000, $40,000 to begin pursuing land use approvals, and then continue landowner discussions in the area of the proposed discharge. We had some initial discussions in previous years, and those landowners are ready to talk and are open to the discussion, but we put those on hold while we do some of these studies. So those would be your next steps, and be happy to answer any questions and engage in discussion.
Thank you. I had a question, if somebody else wants to go first.
This seems expensive compared to other options that we've looked at already. And so would this fit into current BMC project plans to be considered perhaps after other methods of recharge have proven ineffective?
The BMC, the basin plan does mention creek recharge as a project but doesn't put a number on it because these regulations were really in their infancy when we drafted the plan, and now they've come to fruition. So you certainly could prioritize your – I mean, that's really the function of this committee is to prioritize your efforts. But this is one that has some promise, but it does come with a price tag.
Mark, did you have something to add to that? Because I had a question. And my question
my comments are more to the report from Mike Lindley, MKN. Was a little alarmed at first. They seem to be getting out in front of it, but then they bring it back at the end and start talking about a very careful, stepwise approach. It's not real clear in here that they understand that those advanced treatment options that create a brine stream are problematic in Los Osos, to say the least. But then as I'm looking at your next steps, I very much think the BMC needs to discuss that, and especially the first one, looking at the most efficient use of effluent, because when we look at our discharge sites in town, the high priority ones, which are replacing potable water use for irrigation on green space, that's less than 100 acre feet. And then it gets substantially less efficient for the remaining 300 to 400 acre feet for what we're doing. I'd be real curious about the return on the investment when we're down into those kind of numbers, 300 to 400 acre feet for some of these facilities and whatnot. Although on the other hand, it's rather attractive to have a lower number when travel time underground is a key issue. If we were trying to force 1,000 acre feet a year into the creek and make those travel times, it could be difficult. So I think it is really looking at the most efficient use of one of the key water sources that we have, that wastewater treatment plant discharge. So if we're really talking about getting into the details, and especially in the order that they're talked about, and at the same time there's an availability of grants to do that first section of work that's in the technical report, I think we should really discuss that over the next couple meetings and think about moving forward. Although certainly sensitive when you talk about grants. There's a match, and I'd want to hear from the water company representatives, which is you all, about how that works with the other programs that are going on in the Basin Management Plan, especially timing perspective on it. So I don't want to say right now, oops, too expensive, we don't want to go that way, but it'd be interesting to hear how it does line up with the other Basin Management Plan programs that you mentioned. And I think at some point we do need to maximize the efficiency of that effluent because, as has been pointed out, right now we're going to Broderson, and that's our version of a seawater discharge point. It's someplace to put the water. We can't figure out where else to put it, and we need to really cut that back. So if we look 5-10 years in the future, even 15 years, this kind of thing is going to be very, very important, I think.
Yeah, so we'll go to public comment here, but I had a comment because when I first started reading this, I was sort of on the same page as Mark was until I got to that little sketchy sketch with the pine trees in it, which I didn't understand that part. But the question I have is when we get to table 4 and 5, which has the tasks and then the costs, some of the costs, at least from my viewing of this and having done this in other areas, just don't seem to correlate. So I think if we're going to move forward with this, I think we need to have a little more cost engineering, for lack of a better term, on the costs proposed in Table 5, because it just seems like some of them just don't fit with each other at all. So, and where I'm coming from on that primarily is the pilot studies and that type of things, because if you look at the water quality baseline being developed and then the pilot studies, they just don't seem to correlate. So I'd like to have you take or MKN or whoever take a more detailed look at these costs and make sure, again, that they're value engineered and represent, you know, true costs.
Fair enough.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I just have a couple comments, too. Just, you know, agreeing with that cost benefit comparison, you know, that was just something that I whenever I read through this, needed to understand a little better. So, you know, and just moving with caution through this, there's you know, considerable risk of this project, although, you know, potential high benefit for it. And at the same token, we've invested in some of these other options. And, you know, before we go down, the cost on this was much more than I anticipated just reading it. So it was kind of a sticker. I'm still in sticker shock from it. And just like you said, I think that the wording here is just to more absorb this right now and kind of understand it a little better. But having a better cost benefit, really understanding that, is this something that we can, you know, will make a huge difference and solve Los Osos water problems? I mean, you know, can we get to that level of understanding this project? But, you know, the grant funding project portion of it, would that be something that the Morro Bay National Estuary Program would be still participating in, or are they done at this point? Was another question just as far as the cost of it. And then, you know, the protective of existing production wells that are in that area. I didn't really capture that, you know, we were going to put in monitoring wells, but is there some potential for risk there of existing production too? Would be an area of caution. So
I did want to respond to the Morro Bay Estuary Program. So there, as funding is available, there are certain elements that we're just, our interests are so well aligned, like testing the creek. I mean, it really addresses their mandates and ours. So some of that they may be willing, as funding allows, to participate in, because their funding is limited also. So it'd be on a as possible basis. Certainly any downstream production well is an issue. For instance, you probably don't remember this because it's been so long, but some of the on-property wells that were of a domestic nature, we'd have to make sure they weren't impacted or received an alternative source of potable water. And so everybody who's down gradient, you have to look at both know, domestic and purveyor and any other well that's going to be used for drinking water, which we have a pretty good handle on, and it's really this particular location is pretty viable when it comes to having pretty limited wells that are in the vicinity. So hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, and if I could just follow up on the estuary program, since I'm the chair of the executive committee who does the granting. We did get our budget approved by the Congress in the continuing resolution, so we're going to have the same funding for the upcoming fiscal year. But we do have limited money that we allocate for grant funding every year. So if it's something that this committee wants to pursue, it would be worthwhile to get that grant application in sooner than later. So that's something, I mean, it doesn't have to be in the next month, but I think that's something we can look at our next meeting as far as how that grant could be postured, because we allocate the grants basically on what the impact is on the estuary program. So, you know, some people ask for things that have no impact on the estuary program and they don't get funded. So, all right, so we'll go to public comment on this item. Item 7D, the Creek Discharge Plan Technical Memorandum, prepared by NKN.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Jeff Edwards, good afternoon. I would respectfully submit to this committee that this creek discharge project could be one of the single most important basin management efforts you could endeavor upon. I fully endorse the GRRP and its implementation. As Rob mentioned, the creek is connected to our lower basin. In other words, zones D and E sweep up in daylight at the creek bottom. This is how our lower basin is recharged naturally during the wet weather when it's raining and we have precipitation. So this is what Mother Nature does to replenish our lower groundwater basin. This project would simply mimic Mother Nature in that regard. And so it seems like a pretty important project, especially when you consider that the seawater intrusion is really what we're trying to address here. So if we can create a head by virtue of the discharge, the seasonal discharge in the creek, to push on that wedge or that finger, I think that's a good thing. From a historical perspective, this idea of a creek discharge goes back to the 1980s. In fact, when the first wastewater project that I was familiar with, this was the single way we were going to dispose of the treated effluent in the creek. There wasn't a Broaderson. There wasn't any other consideration. It was all going in the creek. And so we fast forward to 2007 when the county took over the wastewater project, and they specifically, by design, did not include any outfall, ocean, creek, or anything. And in fact, the county's position was it was too complex and too difficult to permit this kind of seasonal discharge. Well, I disagreed with that thinking then, and I think while there is a high bar, it can be done. So here we are now. Instead of the wastewater project having this incorporated into it, it's up to the Basin Management Committee. You've heard that funding is available, I think, at both the state and federal level. This is exactly the kind of project the state has been preaching. From what I hear. Other than one-to-one offsets of potable water, I would submit that this is the highest priority in terms of allocating treated effluent. It beats Broaderson, I think, clearly, because we get water in the lower basin where the seawater intrusion is. We don't need it in zone C necessarily. We're a little unsure of the dynamics there. But this is a very high priority project. I would urge your committee to process the CDP for this project at the earliest possible time. I think it's perhaps a little premature right now before you conduct a little bit of additional studies to better perfect your project design, because once you start the permit process, you want to have a pretty good idea what your project looks like. But as soon as possible, I would encourage
you to file the necessary coastal development permit and so forth. This is a relatively low-cost, low-tech solution. And for those reasons, I would urge you to move forward on this as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen again. We seem to be talking a lot about Brodersen. One question I have is maybe you could clarify. The water is put into the ground at Brodersen. It supposedly goes down into the upper aquifer. It eventually comes down, and we find it in the monitoring wells. What is the purpose of putting more water in the upper aquifer? Long term, we're hoping that it will go through the aquitard to the lower aquifer. Do we know if there is seawater already intruded in that lower aquifer? Apparently, it looks like it from diagrams. If that is the case, what in the world are we doing this for? The water that would be filtered down through Brodersen, I think, would be cleaned. So what is coming into the upper aquifer would be usable. And we are trying to go into cleaning some of the upper aquifer water and using it. So that makes sense. But if we're really trying to get that water down into the lower aquifer where it has already been saltwater intruded, that's a total, we're dumping water. The idea of the creek discharge makes sense all year that we can do it. When it's raining and we have full creek activity going on, maybe we need a place to dump it like Brodersen. But it will be going into the upper aquifer first. So that's one thing. And I wonder, are we any closer to getting any kind of monitoring on all the private wells? Because, again, you can't figure this out till you know what everybody is using in the basin. And they're the ones that we have no clue how much they're using. And the laws are there to protect their usage, but it shouldn't be to protect the fact that we have no information to go on. So I just wanted to bring that up. Thank you. Thank
you. Yep. Additional?
Steve Best. Seems like we're talking about growth for growth's sake and money for God's sake. And we've losing sight of what we're really talking about here with whether we're dumping this effluent that's coming out of the reclaimed water site, whether we're dumping that water with all the CECs into Brodersen or we're going to dump it into the creek. What happens if we're wrong? What happens if our formulas and our calculations have made a mistake and we're poisoning either the upper aquifer or going to poison the lower aquifer. And we're doing this all so we can do more building here in Los Osos because that's really what the sewer was for in the first place, so we could do more building and pack more homes within this space here and have more rats in the cage. If we're going to put water back into the ground to replenish the aquifer, we should be doing it right. We should be doing it clean. And at what point do you use our minds and think outside the box and put it back in the ground the way it was intended to, clean, and do it right? There's ways of doing it right. There's ways of mitigating cost factors. You don't have to do it the way everybody else has done it. We can come up with ways of solving this issue. So, and I'd like to talk about it. We have options with the our reclamation site that we can reclaim that water, turn it into potable water, and put it into either Brodersen to help heal the upper aquifer, and we can put it into the creek bed and help push back against the saltwater intrusion area. And we can do both, and we can do it with clean, potable water, and we can also sell that water to our neighbors so we can take less water out of the aquifer in the first place, so we're not taking water out just to irrigate our lawns. You know, there's a lot of things we could do. We could do it smart, and but we got to be willing to be smart. We got to be willing to take care of our town. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Richard, is there anybody after Richard? Richard, you'll be the last then.
Richard Markinson. Rob, can you put up the slide with the breakdown of how much was going to Ag and Broderson?
Table 2, I think.
That one. Yeah. Two things I think need to happen. I think you need to figure out the first step, how much affluent can go towards this. But part of that equation is the reservation for Ag. Let's step back, I don't know, 8 years, whatever it was, when this project was before the Planning Commission. At that point, the estimate of what the flow was going to be was double, more than double what it is now. So when attempts were made to where this water was going to go after it was processed at the plant, I was at every one of those meetings, and they were trying to fill boxes to get to 100%. And that's literally how a portion of the breakdown came about. And I believe that if you go back, especially based on the mitigation factors for seawater intrusion, and I've said this for a number of years, I believe if you go back to the Coastal Commission and say, this plan now doesn't fit the current flows by any stretch of the imagination, that 10% reserve that you don't know what's going to have to happen with it at this point, whether it's going to be a requirement or not, the only thing you have, any place you have any potential for that now is the contracts with the dryland farmers. And that has no mitigation factor. The other farmers at this point aren't lining up to take any of that at a mitigation factor that's not even viable compared to every other option up there. So I think you need to find out how much effluent is available, if you can get that corrected with the Coastal Commission. And if you go back to those meetings, there's evidence there of this was the amount that we thought we had to distribute at that point. It's nowhere near that now. It's not going to be near that even when the 7% that Evan hooked up have hooked up. It's not going to be that. And then when you get that number, then do your cost-benefit analysis, absolutely. But there's another component to that. If you're going to go with this, you have a number of infrastructure projects already in the ground that are being paid for the next 30, 40 years. If this is added as a component at any one of those options with the cost per acre foot into the future, it's going to have an impact on ratepayers. And what that impact on ratepayers will be in the future, either tied to the wastewater project, whatever costs are paid by the wastewater project, or by the individual ratepayers. We just had a massive, substantial increase in the CSD rate structure to pay for infrastructure projects. Now this is a potential additional on top of that into the future. I think the public deserves the right to know what those additional costs are going to be on top of their current costs for water and wastewater.
Thank you. Okay, nobody else? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back. I don't know if you have any comments, Rob, or then we'll...
I just had one brief one. The public comment was great, by the way. I think it was very helpful in preparing staff for the next meeting. I did want to respond to Lindy's concern that wedge that comes off of Broderson, is there a portion of that that ends up just simply going into the seawater intruded areas of the lower aquifer? An interesting question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but I think we we do want to look at that. Is that spreading to the point where some of that is simply lost? You know, as our understanding matures over the years. I keep asking about the private well metering, Lindy. I think it is important ultimately that we monitor all wells, all extractions within the basin. And the other comments, I think, were well received.
Yeah, and the well monitoring, that's under the purview of the county, so that's something that's a political decision that the board will have to make. Is that correct, Mark?
I imagine so, yes. Unless Sacramento makes it for us first. Yeah,
that would be true. As part of the Sigma. Okay, we need to provide some input or direction on this, or just what Rob's heard today and bring it back next meeting?
Yeah, I have heard Richard's comments many times about the Dryland Farm recharge projects, and I haven't heard much come back from this committee to discuss that, and I think that maybe at the next meeting, maybe we should discuss that.
Well, what Richard is saying is true, because I was on the technical advisory committee, as Rob. I mean, that was really what Richard's saying is true. There was a projection of X amount of water being generated, and there had to be some silos, for lack of a better term, where that water could be used or gotten rid of, because you couldn't be generating 800,000, you know, gallons or cubic feet and only be able to dispose of 400. So that was, as Richard said, was a result of where are we going to put that water. So I think the issue really becomes prioritizing that, which was not something that we did on the TAC.
Right.
That's technical advisory committee what the TAC was. So, do you have anything to add to that?
Just
Rob?
I think that'll be the substance of what we talk about, I think, at the next meeting, is how do we prioritize this? We flipped the thing on its head, and now we're coming at it from a different angle that we haven't really done as a community. Now it's very limited. Now we really have to make strategic choices. So.
Okay, so you got something to add?
Could we have staff look at some steps of next steps in some of the funding mechanisms that we could utilize for next steps on this without incurring a lot of costs at this point? I think that would be something that. To keep it alive, you know, which we want to do, and keep things moving, and we could look at diving into the details of this cost analysis and the next steps in an approach that keeps things moving.
Yes, we've already reached out to some of the grant agencies and are beginning that process, so we will bring that back and try to make it bite-sized.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll finish that with 7D, and then we'll go to public comment for items that were not on the agenda. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Edwards.
And I'm not playing on my phone. What I'm doing is timing you guys. Okay. If you guys
great.
Were wondering.
I'd like to identify an information disconnect. I work a lot with county planning staff and also the Coastal Commission staff. And I will tell you that, for the most part, the staffs of the county and the Coastal Commission, they don't have any understanding of the numbers that we're talking about relative to our basin. For example, they don't have any idea what the safe yield of our basin is. I just received a mitigated negative declaration on a project I'm working on in the basin, outside of the prohibition zone, and the neg deck says that the safe yield of our basin is 3,200 acre feet. This was released last week. That's not close. Demand. The Coastal Commission thinks that each home uses 1 acre foot per year. Way off. Not even close. So, there are several documents. The mitigated negative deck that I cited, they were using the ISJ working group information for their source. Obviously, that's old. But even our basin management plan is way out of date. The numbers in there are not accurate. I mean, if you look closely, maybe you can pick them out here and there. But we don't have good, the county and the state, they don't have good numbers relative to our basin. They don't understand the demand, and they certainly don't understand a hypothetical build-out. So I urge this body and staff to get with the respective staffs of those agencies and educate them about the numbers. Get them on board. For example, the safe yield of our basin, as I understand it, is 2,450 acre feet. That's the current recognized safe yield. This is important in part because County Planning Department is formulating a community plan. You've heard about that. And in that plan, by definition, we need build-out numbers and projections about demand. Without those, the community plan is dead on arrival. Might as well just forget about it. So, again, I think it's critically important that we update those, the county and the state, and maybe we need to refer them to the annual reports because I think that's where more current information resides. But the bottom line is, please direct your staff to work with county and coastal staffs to get the real numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy?
Hi, Lindy again. I wanted to address some concern I heard. I guess the Anastasi property out at Sea Pines is proposing, again, to get their permit refreshed. And their intention is to put between 80 to 100 homes in that area. I would say they're probably premature, I hope. Again, I think we need to look at, we've used up most of the credits, the toilet, you know, retrofit credits have all been used up. So we don't have much available for new growth. And I know people want to grow here. That's the whole dream of this sewer to begin with. But what I'm thinking is that it requires imported water. We have no excess water. So we're at a point now where we really, if we're going to get realistic, we need imported water. The imported water was millions and millions more, you know, to bring it in. I think the only place that I can see getting it from is maybe Morro Bay if we end up with some kind of treatment to help them reduce the cost of their treatment plant and help us pay for the unused portion of our treatment plant. It seems like a win-win. They get a lot of their water, I believe, from Whale Rock. They have some state water, and you could correct me, Mark, but Morro Bay does currently, they throw every drop that they treat is out in the ocean. So this would not be a loss if they send their waste over to us, we process it, we keep the water. It gives us imported water in a probably a much more productive way than some of things like, what was that? We were evaporating, all of our effluent was being sprayed into the air, spray fields. That was a fabulous bad idea from the county. And that would have made us have to pay for the $10 million, you know, pipe in from their water source. So anyway, this is all about water, and the growth is all about the sewer. And unfortunately, now we have a sewer, and nobody ever explained to them that we would be out of water by the time that sewer was built. So I think you need to start getting real about the Morro Bay potential, because that's the imported water we might be able to make use of. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Yep, Steve.
Steve Best. Los Vistas is about 10 square miles, 12 and a half square miles if you count the sand spit. And we're about 15,000 population. Morro Bay is about 10 square miles and about 10,000 population. So we're about 50% higher population in about the same footprint. And we're expected to grow, increase our density in that population, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. We've performed all these conservation measures so that we can continue to conserve on water, so we can make room for more development within this town, and how we can put the water back in the ground without making sure that it's going to pollute our existing aquifer. We've kind of ignored that and hope that it's not going to poison that all the CECs and medications and salts that we're putting back in there are not going to ruin those aquifers for future, that we're not going to have to take the water that we take out in our wells and run it through osmosis before we can put it back into our pipelines to so we can open our taps. It's ridiculous. We should be thinking hard and long about whether we should allow this town to, you know, how can this town grow more than it is? How can we make this a better town, you know, still allow it to grow, in a way that is going to benefit Los Osos, allow it to grow economically? You know, growth doesn't necessarily mean adding more people. Growth could be a lot of different things. So we got to be smart about it. We can't be killing our aquifers, and we can't be killing our own population. Because right now, if you look at how this town has changed over the past 10 years, the effect of all the political and sewer wars and everything else is how it's changed the population and the attitude of our neighbors. You know, we're rats in a cage. We're killing ourselves, and it's not good. If we start increasing our population by another, you know, 20, 50, or 20, 30%, this is not going to be a good place to live any longer. And you know, we might as well go ahead and stick the, you know, effluent right in the ground, inject it right in the ground as it is.
Okay.
It's not going to be, it's not going to be worth the drink.
Wrap it up.
So do what you want, but we should be putting clean water back in the ground. And if anybody's serious about wanting to put good, potable, clean water back in the ground, I'd like to talk to you about it. And we can do it. And we can do it inexpensively and environmentally soundly. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Items not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll close this. I just have one other thing before we adjourn. I just want to make sure we're set when we set the date for next month's meeting. I'm going to be gone. I've got my LAFCO conference down in San Diego, and I'm going to be touring the San Diego Water Authority desal plant, which generates 50 million gallons a day. So that's going to be on the 5th. So as long as we can stay on the 18th, which is our normal date, I'm fine with that. So
what about November? If we don't have we've been tending to skip a month. What about November the 3rd Wednesday, which is the 15th of November? Are we okay on that date?
The 15th of November?
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
The 15th?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Of November. Yeah. We would skip October and go to 15th of November.
Yeah, we'd love to hear a little bit about that San Diego facility, and you might ask them if they've heard of solar distillation as well. I'm curious.
I know it's going to be interesting. It's award-winning, as you know, but 50 million gallons a day. Supervisor Compton and I are going on the tour. So,
I have a question about it's become a traditional here to skip a month and only meet every other month. And I've been coming to these meetings regularly. I can't remember the reason for that. Is the staff, is it a staff loading issue?
No, it's more trying to be efficient and have enough on the agenda
to where I don't come here with one or two items. I mean, if there's something urgent, very time sensitive, okay, then we'll do it monthly. But I sense that we were meeting to have a meeting, and I didn't want to do that. So it seems like every other month is a good rhythm for us.
Okay. Fair enough, and as long as we've mentioned that out loud, I think that's good enough for me.
Okay. All right, then we'll be adjourned until November 15th. Thank you.